Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 785, Bitcoinberg part four, subtitled Fool's Gold part two. This has been recorded on April 2nd of the year 2014. This program is the fourth program we have done about the online cryptocurrency Bitcoin. And I recommend people to For the Record 760, 764, and 770 in order to flesh out their understanding. To make a very, very long story, very, very short, the available evidence suggests that the mythical Satoshi Nakamoto is not the actual creator of Bitcoin, but in all probability, Bitcoin was created by a consortium in Europe. We have presented our working hypothesis, which frankly I think is the best advanced so far, that in fact three people associated with a company called Lantic, L-A-N-T-I-Q, an offshoot of Siemens, the German electronics giant that was capitalized by Golden Gate Capital in turn, composed of alumni of Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's firm, are the actual creators of Bitcoin. It is our opinion that Bitcoin is, in all probability, an op, that is to say, an intelligence operation and a money-making vehicle for those on the inside. Its theoretical foundation is not only libertarianism, but, as we will see later when we return to the subject, the Austrian School of Economics. In our long, ongoing Eddie the Friendly Spook series about Edward Snowden, we have taken a look at the Austrian School of Economics, and in particular the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And when you begin taking a look at who is actually involved with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, you find people who explicitly reject democracy, who explicitly endorse slavery past, present and future, people linked to the League of the South, people linked to Ron Paul, Edward Snowden's presidential candidate of choice, and the man whose chief legal advisor is the Snowden family attorney, although Eddie the Friendly Spook has been using an ACLU attorney for PR purposes, a guy named Bruce Fein, F-E-I-N, the top legal advisor for Ron Paul's campaign, is actually the Snowden family attorney. When you look at the Austrian School of Economics, which portrays itself as libertarian and offering all sorts of freedom and opportunity, in fact, you find people, again, who believe in slavery, who reject democracy, who endorse absolute monarchy, like Hans Hermann Hoppe, the political mentor or idol of Cody Ross, a key Bitcoin advocate. Bitcoin is anything but the panacea that it has been recommended as being. Warren Buffett, the investing giant and multi-billionaire, recently referred to it as a mirage and counseled investors to stay away. We're going to be examining Bitcoin, and I think in the adventures or misadventures of Bitcoin, in and of itself, I think, as tragic as it is in some ways, laughable, tragic, because a lot of people have gotten hurt, and that is always sad. Laughable because, frankly, I think that their pain, their suffering, their loss was absolutely predictable. People have been investing a tremendous amount of time and money in something created by somebody they don't even know. Newsweek magazine recently offered what they considered to be a scoop that that Satoshi Nakamoto, the mysterious creator of Bitcoin, was actually hiding all along under the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. An individual with that name in Southern California was fingered by Newsweek as the actual creator of Bitcoin. He denies it, maybe engaging in a lawsuit, and he's actually unemployed and impoverished. I would also note that David Jang, whose company owns the new Newsweek, it went out of publication, has a background with the Unification Church of Sun Myung Moon. We're going to take a look at the tragicomic Bitcoin, the misadventures of Bitcoin in this particular program. We concluded, for the record, program 772 about collateralized death obligations by theorizing that as Bitcoin gathered momentum and as mysterious deaths began to affect some of the primary players in Bitcoin, that the aficionados of this online cryptocurrency would have to develop their own special currency for whacking each other, for putting out a contract on each other called Hitcoin, unquote. In witness of that, consider the following. This from NBC News from March 5th of 2014. This is an article by Javier E. David, or David, D-A-V-I-D, titled, Head of Online Currency Exchange Found Dead in Singapore. Autumn Radke, R-A-D-T-K-E, the CEO of an upstart online currency exchange, died last week under mysterious circumstances at her home in Singapore. Radke, the U.S.-born head of First Meta, was found dead by local police on February 28th, with the cause of death yet to be determined. In a statement on its website, First Meta said the company, quote, was shocked and saddened by the tragic loss of our friend and CEO, Autumn Radke. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, the company's director and non-executive chairman, Douglas Abrams, said the exact cause of Radke's death was, quote, still under investigation, unquote. Prior to taking the reins at First Meta in 2012, the 28-year-old Radke had once closely worked with technology giant Apple to bring cloud computing software to Johns Hopkins University, Los Alamos Laboratories, and the Aerospace Corporation, according to her biography. She then took up business development roles at tech startups Xfire and Geodelic Systems, according to information on her LinkedIn profile. First Meta bills itself as a clearinghouse for the purchase and exchange of virtual currencies, including Bitcoin. Skipping down, her death comes as troubles swirl around the nascent cryptocurrency industry and amid a rash of suicides in the financial industry as a whole. Last week, the world's largest Bitcoin exchange, Mt. Gox, imploded. And meanwhile, nearly $500 million in Mt. Gox clients' funds vanished overnight. Elsewhere, untimely demises unrelated to Bitcoin have claimed the lives of bankers at J.P. Morgan, Deutsche Bank, and Zurich Insurance Group. By the way, there have been a lot of other very suspicious deaths in the time since we did, for the record, 772. We are going to be talking about the implosion of Mt. Gox, which is was the world's largest Bitcoin exchange. And again, it is at one level funny and another level deeply tragic. It reminds me of the passage from Nietzsche that I have quoted before. A joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling. More about Bitcoin. The Bitcoin industry has its foundation, sort of its leadership group, its industry trade group, called the Bitcoin Foundation. And now people are beginning to point fingers at the leadership of that group. This is an article from the Pando Daily of March 27th of 2014. It's by Michael Karn, C-A-R-N, titled Leaderless, Bitcoin Foundation Plagued by Allegations of Self-Dealing and Embezzlement, unquote. It reads in part, what is the role of an industry trade group and how much authority should companies place in the hands of these unofficial leaders? That is the question much of the Bitcoin community is asking at the moment, as the Bitcoin Foundation, the industry's unofficial custodian and mouthpiece, faces allegations of self-dealing and embezzlement. According to the foundation's own website, it exists to, quote, standardize, protect, and promote the use of Bitcoin cryptographic money for the benefit of users worldwide. Several hundred Bitcoin companies are members of the foundation and have donated heavily to fund its operations. The organization is led by a board of prominent cryptocurrency entrepreneurs, investors, journalists, and academics, chiefly its chairman, CoinLab founder Peter Vesenes, V-E-S-S-E-N-E-S, who has been the subject of most of the skepticism and scrutiny. The spotlight was first shown on the foundation's leadership by controversial Bitcoin blogger Ryan Selkis, S-E-L-K-I-S, a.k.a. the 2-Bit Idiot. On March 2nd, following the unraveling of Mt. Gox, Selkis wrote that Vesenes and Executive Director John Matonis, M-A-T-O-N-I-S, would be stepping down prior to the conclusion of their current terms, seemingly recognizing the need for the foundation to clean house in order to revitalize its image in the coming months. Days later, when forced to retract that prediction, Selkis began an aggressive and occasionally manic campaign calling for their immediate ouster due to a failure of leadership. At his most livid, Selkis called the current board illegitimate, unquote, and demanded that senior leaders across the Bitcoin ecosystem stage a coup or kill the foundation altogether, a position from which he later backed down, but not before writing, quote, Peter Vesenes and John Matonis are not scapegoats. They are not innocent bystanders, and they are not ethically entitled to remain in their board seats through later this year. Unquote. Selkis then promised to reveal, quote, damning facts, unquote, if his demands were not met, including those relating to the foundation ignoring warning signs of Mt. Gox's failure as early as April of 2013, foundation directors exploiting their positions to withdraw funds from a failing Mt. Gox while the general public was losing their shirts, and conflicts of interest between directors' roles within the foundation and their personal Bitcoin businesses. Parenthetically, I don't know how accurate Mr. Selkis's charges are, but one of the things that we have been looking at is the fact that all of the myriad and manifest sins that have been ailing the financial industry and, quote, banksters, unquote, have not only cropped up big time in the Bitcoin community, which was supposedly the answer, the panacea to all of those ills, but in many ways they are even worse. And Bitcoin is also experiencing some things that the mainstream financial community, as corrupt as it is, has not been experiencing simply because it is regulated up to a point. Continuing. After several days of self-described backlash from the Bitcoin community, Selkis issued a concession and, quote, never published those damning facts, despite maintaining that his accusations were 100% truthful, unquote. Selkis's lightning rod status cannot be denied and has made it easy for many to write off his claims as those of a man who is seeking attention. He has acknowledged on multiple occasions plans to write a book about Bitcoin's recent scandals, and he has also been charged with hoping to enrich his own Bitcoin insurance startup through spreading fear. But it bears noting that for all of his bluster, Selkis has also been the source of a number of accurate and impactful breaking news stories, not the least of which was publishing Mt. Gox's crisis strategy documents ahead of its eventual bankruptcy. Now, however, it's not just Selkis who's beating the drum for changes atop the Bitcoin Foundation. Blockchain.info CSO Andreas Antonopoulos, A-N-T-O-N-O-P-O-U-L-O-S, who is held as close to being a deity as anyone within the Bitcoin community, has also called for leadership change. Speaking on the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast yesterday, Antonopoulos called the foundation, quote, rotten from the top, unquote, and said that he wouldn't be surprised to see it implode due to embezzlement. Skipping down once again. in this article. Antonopoulos didn't suggest any direct knowledge of embezzlement or criminal wrongdoing, nor did he provide any evidence to that effect. He simply said that he views it as inevitable due to the character and competence of the foundation's leadership, leadership that until recently included Mark Karpeles, K-A-R-P-E-L-E-S, the CEO who led Mt. Gox into bankruptcy, and Charlie Shrem, the Bitcoin entrepreneur recently charged with money laundering, among other offenses. Antonopoulos' statements are complicated by the fact that he is a volunteer member of a Bitcoin Foundation working group, a fact that he acknowledges within the podcast. I would note, as we have seen in past programs, Charlie Shrem was charged with money laundering in connection with the Silk Road Network. That was an online Bitcoin marketplace, I guess you could say, that offered the trafficking in firearms, illegal drugs, forged visas and passports, contract killings, and a number of other things. The head, the ostensible head of Silk Road, was also a devotee of the Austrian School of Economics and a big admirer of Ron Paul. And we're going to talk more about Silk Road right now. I would note that in For the Record 764, we noted that a successor network to Silk Road called Sheep Marketplace vanished and took millions upon millions of dollars, something like $100 million worth of investors' bitcoins with it. And some of them, since this was involved with, again, illegal drug trafficking, it left a number of its patrons having to answer some very pointed and pained questions to some of their creditors. Again, this is the illegal drug business, and sometimes the aggrieved creditors can be most lethal in their claiming of compensation. Well, eventually Sheep Marketplace, whose users got fleeced, who got shorn, so to speak, was replaced by a new Silk Road. This was Silk Road 2.0. You know, this entire program could be subtitled Whoops, because Silk Road 2.0 came, and then whoops, Silk Road 2.0 has vanished. CNN Money of February 14th of 2014 has an article by Jose Paglieri, P-A-G-L-I-E-R-Y, called Drug Site Silk Road Wiped Out by Bitcoin Glitch, unquote. And by the way, we're going to be talking about Mt. Gox later. This is supposedly the same glitch that took down Mt. Gox. This reads in part, the revived online black market Silk Road says hackers took advantage of an ongoing Bitcoin glitch to steal $2.7 million from its customers. The underground website's anonymous administrator told users Thursday that attackers had made off with all of the funds that it held in escrow. Silk Road serves as a middleman between buyers and sellers, temporarily holding on to funds in its own accounts during a deal. Buyers put their money into Silk Road's accounts, and sellers then withdraw it. At the time of the attack, there were about 4,440 bitcoins in Silk Road's escrow account, according to computer security researcher Nicholas Weaver. The news has shaken confidence in Bitcoin. Prices dropped sharply overnight, though they've since bounced back to about $660. Silk Road can only be accessed on the deep web using Tor, T-O-R, a special program that hides your physical location. The FBI shut down Silk Road and arrested its alleged founder in October, but shortly thereafter, tech-savvy outlaws started Silk Road 2.0 in its place. It is primarily used to buy and sell drugs. Bitcoins are the only kind of currency accepted on the site because they are traded electronically and are difficult to trace to individuals. But Bitcoin accounts also lack the protections that most bank accounts have, including government-backed insurance. That means the Bitcoin stolen from the Silk Road users are gone forever. The new site's administrator, a faceless persona known only as DEFCON, capital D-E-F-C-O-N, posted a nerve-wracking message Thursday night that began with, "I am sweating as I write this," unquote. He said hackers took advantage of the same flaw in Bitcoin that knocked down major exchanges Bitstamp and Mt. Gox offline over the past 2 weeks. That glitch allowed Silk Road hackers to repeatedly withdraw Bitcoins from the site's accounts until they were empty. In detailing the alleged hack, DEFCON listed the online identities of the three supposed attackers and shared records of the transactions. And in an example of the kind of dark, dangerous world of illegal drug trade, DEFCON called on the public to, quote, "stop at nothing to bring this person to your own definition of justice," unquote. Still quoting the anonymous DEFCON, "I failed you as a leader and am completely devastated by today's discoveries," unquote, DEFCON wrote, adding that the website should have followed the approach of other Bitcoin exchanges and halted withdrawals due to the Bitcoin system flaw. Silk Road has since temporarily shut down. Many have accused the site's administrators of faking the hack and stealing the money themselves. Well, obviously, I have no idea who actually took the money. However, again, this is not only a deep web, a dark web site that was used for illegal drug trafficking, but again, that is a world that is fraught with peril. Again, note what DEFCON said. He called on the public to, quote, "stop at nothing to bring this person to your own definition of justice," unquote. Whoever that person might be, one wonders if DEFCON actually had the right individuals, given the fundamentally anonymous ambience of those who engage in these kinds of activities. Again, I would note my humorous, although perhaps more substantively accurate comment than I realized at the time, that perhaps a Bitcoin entrepreneur should begin developing their own currency to finance contracts put out on fellow Bitcoin enthusiasts. Apparently, bots, internet robots, have now begun using that same alleged glitch that brought down Mt. Gox and Bitstamp and allegedly Silk Road 2.0. Now, Bitcoin exchanges are under a massive and concerted attack. Information about that from the CoinDesk blog of February 11th of 2014. This is by Emily Spaven, S-P-A-V-E-N, headlined, "Bitcoin exchanges under massive and concerted attack," unquote. It reads in part, "A, quote, massive and concerted attack," unquote, "has been launched by a bot system on numerous Bitcoin exchanges," Andreas Antonopoulos has revealed. "This has led to popular exchange Bitstamp putting a temporary halt on all Bitcoin withdrawals and BTC-E announcing possible delays on transaction crediting." Antonopoulos, who is the chief security officer of blockchain.info, said a DDoS, denial of service attack, is taking Bitcoin's transaction malleability problem and applying it to many transactions in the network simultaneously. Quote, "so as transactions are being created, malformed parallel transactions are also being created so as to create a fog of confusion over the entire network, which then affects almost every single implementation out there," unquote, he added. Antonopoulos went on to say that blockchain.info's implementation is not affected, but some exchanges have been affected. Their internal accounting systems are gradually going out of sync with the network. He emphasized that this isn't affecting all withdrawals because most exchanges are not processing them automatically. Mt. Gox is the exchange that has suffered the most over the past few days due to a number of factors, said Antonopoulos. One problem is that it was using a custom client, not the core Bitcoin software. On top of that, there is the DDoS attack, plus it was using an automated system to approve withdrawals. This is not happening to other exchanges because they're not stupid enough to issue withdrawals without checking them out first, unquote, he explained. Antonopoulos said, we will see a few exchanges suspend withdrawals temporarily while they rework their accounting systems to ensure that they are not confused by the attack. Skipping down, he added, web wallets and other services that build services on top of Bitcoin are reporting problems similar to Mt. Gox and are taking safety measures to ensure no fund loss during this network disruption. And there are also numerous assurances from leaders of the Bitcoin Foundation that people should not panic. And we're going to be dealing at considerable length with the Mt. Gox downfall. Mt. Gox was the largest Bitcoin exchange. It was based in Japan. Just a little bit about that. This from Bloomberg News of February 25th of 2014. Article by Carter Doherty, D-O-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y, and Pavel Alpayev, A-P-A-L-P-E-Y-E-V. Mt. Gox exchange down amid $365 million theft claim. Mt. Gox, the Tokyo-based Bitcoin exchange that halted withdrawals this month, went offline as a document surfaced alleging long-term theft of about $365 million in the digital currency. A document posted online that appeared to be an internal strategy paper said unidentified thieves stole 744,408 bitcoins from the exchange, about $365 million at current rates, and that the theft, quote, went unnoticed for several years, unquote. The reality is that Mt. Gox can go bankrupt at any moment and certainly deserves to go as a company, unquote, according to the document. The document, which outlines plans for leadership changes, rebranding, and a possible move to Singapore, was posted online by blogger Ryan Galt, G-A-L-T, a person briefed on the situation at Mt. Gox who asked to remain anonymous because the document is private, said he believed it is authentic. Bitcoin fell 5% to $517.71 at 4:48 p.m. London time, according to the CoinDesk Bitcoin Price Index, which averages exchange prices. That's down from as high as $1,151 on December 4th. We're going to explore the down to demise of Mt. Gox at greater length inside two. The other programs about Bitcoin, all the rest of the For the Record shows in my entire life's work, plus a small library of old anti-fascist books, available for download for free at spitfirelist.com. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 785, Bitcoinberg part 4, Fool's Gold part 2, being recorded on 4/3/2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.